Look, Mummy, there's an aeroplane up in the sky.
Great speeches and interviews on Access Sacramento and The Voice. I'm Steve Lerman. You can hear us at accesssacramento.org, or you can download this program and previous programs at greatspeechesandinterviews.blogspot.com, or to find out about new programs, friend us at Facebook. Today's program is Robert F. Kennedy Jr., senior attorney at the Natural Resources Defense Council. Kennedy was in San Francisco to promote The Last Mountain, a new film that features his efforts to end mountaintop removal coal mining in West Virginia. Dirty fuels should be forced to cover their full costs. Kennedy says not only could they not compete in the market, renewable energy would win. Kennedy argues our democracy is broken and the campaign finance system is a system of legalized bribery.
And we have an oil, we have our campaign finance system, which is just a system of legalized bribery, has just been opened by the U.S. Supreme Court in the Citizens United case, which is the most disastrous opinion. You know, H.L. Mencken said that a journalist is somebody who can't distinguish between a bicycle accident and the end of civilization. Well, the Citizens United case is the end of civilization, the end of democracy. We have a 100-year-old law that said corporations cannot contribute to federal political candidates or office holders. And the Supreme Court just wiped that out, and we have a tsunami of corporate wealth that is now flooding into the political process and is going to dictate the direction of this country rather than the republic and the democracy. And that is a catastrophe for our country, and Obama has run up against that wall. You know, he passed it through Congress, but you have a Senate that essentially are a group of corporate toadies for coal and oil. They're the carbon cronies, and that's, you know, they're representing their interests rather than the interests of the American people. And, you know, Obama, it's not fair to, you know, to say Obama has failed when, you know, the same thing with his health care. He's running up against the pharmaceutical industry, and the pharmaceutical industry has under its control all of the news organizations. 70% of advertising on network news now comes from pharmaceutical companies. Do you think that they're actually going to control, that they're going to support something that damages their interest? The rest of advertising is coming from the automobile industries and the oil industries. The reason that that Air America failed was not because they didn't have listeners. They had more listeners. They were beating Sean Hannity and Rush Limbaugh in every market. They were the number one radio station in Republican in San Diego, for example. It was a Republican town. And so it wasn't listeners. It wasn't the hunger for progressive talk. It was that they could not get advertising. They were advertising, you know, hair products and penis enlargement and, you know, and these gold scam companies, you know, because they couldn't get national advertisers because they were boycotted by the pharmaceutical industry, the oil industry, the coal industry, and the major national advertisers. And that happened because the abolition of the Fairness Doctrine by Ronald Reagan in 1988, where, you know, the media no longer has the obligation to serve the public interest. They're now serving their shareholders' interest, and they do that not by telling us the issues that we need to understand to make rational decisions in a democracy, but rather by entertaining us. So we're today, you know, by appealing to the prurient interest that all of us have in the reptilian core of our brains for sex and celebrity gossip. So we know a lot about Charlie Sheen, and we know a lot about Britney Spears' gradual, you know, emotional decline, but we know very little about what's happening in Appalachia or about, you know, about global warming or the things we need to know. We're the best entertained and least informed people on the face of the earth, and we cannot keep our international leadership or our democracy if we don't have an informed public that is capable of recognizing all the milestones of tyranny and telling the truth from fiction. You know, in Canada, they don't allow lying on television. It's illegal on the television news to lie. That's why Fox News is not in Canada. And that's why the Canadians didn't follow us into Iraq, into a, you know, an 800-year-old fistfight in Mesopotamia where Dick Cheney was saying, oh, yeah, they're going to meet us with flowers in the streets. The Canadians were saying, are you crazy? Because they weren't listening to Fox News. And, you know, The devolution of the American media and the lack of campaign finance, those are two legs of the three-legged stool of democracy that have folded in our country. And, you know, anybody who looks at American democracy can see we are in worse trouble now than we've ever been since the Gilded Age when this country was owned by corporations. And we have to understand this, that when business is controlled by government, it's called communism. When government is controlled by business, it's called fascism. And our job is to walk that narrow trail in between, keep big government at bay with our left hand, big business at bay with our right, and walk that narrow trail, which is free market capitalism and democracy. And in order to do that, we need a working press that is sophisticated, that is aggressive, and is determined to tell us the truth about issues, and we need an informed public that can recognize the milestones of tyranny. And we don't have that anymore in the United States of America.
Our guest today at the Commonwealth Club is Robert F. Kennedy Jr. Let's have an audience question, please.
Hi. The taxpayers fund the Federal Emergency Management Agency for responding to multiple flooding disasters from mountain topping in West Virginia each year. So I'm wondering why Massey or other coal polluters don't reimburse FEMA for those costs. And if we went from coal to solar or wind farms, a lot of my environmentalist friends say migratory birds, desert tortoises, and others would be at peril. So could you please respond?
Well, there's two questions there. Why doesn't Massey pay the costs that it's imposing on the American public? And, you know, the cost you talk, the FEMA cost, the emergency management cost, the flooding, et cetera, is one example. But there are many, many other examples of that, which is the mercury in our drinking water, the healthy American people, the deaths, which are proven, of, you know, between 47 and 60,000 people a year, the asthma attack, all of these are the costs of coal that they have not been required to pay because, again, we don't have true free market capitalism in this country. We have to understand the difference between free market capitalism, which makes a nation more efficient, more prosperous, and democratic, and what we have today, which we've embraced today, corporate crony capitalism, which is as antithetical to democracy, prosperity, and efficiency in America as it is in Nigeria. So, you know, as long as these companies aren't paying the true cost of bringing their product to market, you're going to get these distortions in the marketplace. Your second question was...
Will the impact on birds of wind power...
Well,
sort of
any way that you produce energy is going to cause environmental impacts. And, you know, you're dealing with the commons here. You're dealing with public trust assets. So what we have to do is have an intelligent debate about where the impacts are smallest. You know, and if it's the difference between cutting down the Appalachian Mountains or killing a few desert tortoise, or maybe endangered bats, we have to look at that and say, is there a way you can mitigate those costs by moving it? By in every case, we want to mitigate the cost as much as possible, but to understand there will be a cost. What is the least cost option? And if we actually incorporate those costs into our economic system, then the free market will answer those questions for us. And we'll say, what's the cheapest form of energy? If you make the energy producers mitigate the cost of bringing their product to market. And that's what the environmental laws were designed to do. The 28 laws we passed after Earth Day 1970 were all designed to restore free market capitalism in this country by forcing actors in the marketplace to pay the true cost of bringing their product to market. And, you know, today those laws have been undermined, and we don't have anything that even looks like free market capitalism in this country. And what we've been trying to do is restore that.
We'll be right back.
run the river keepers and we sue polluters. We go out into the marketplace. We don't even consider ourselves environmentalists. We're free marketeers. We go out into the marketplace and find the cheaters, the polluters, and we'd say to them, we're going to force you to internalize your costs the same way that you're internalizing your profits. Because as long as somebody is getting subsidies, it distorts the whole marketplace. And none of us gets the advantages of the efficiency, the prosperity, and the democracy that true free market capitalism actually delivers to a society.
Let's go to the next audience question, please.
Thank you. One of the most interesting ideas you've presented is the idea of how democracies fail to develop proper markets. And as a teacher, I'm wondering what lessons would you want younger kids, when they're looking at these problems, to understand about the way democracies and markets interact? That's one question. You can take that one on. Or we're going to take a group of seventh graders to Central Valley next year for our outdoor ed trip. Are there local issues that they should approach, and how should they approach them as young students who, because it is a very toxic political world, especially in the news, it's hard to get good information and to judge it. What should they be doing as young,
I think I've been a teacher for 27 years, and I think the most important lesson that we can teach our children is critical thinking. I show them an advertisement on television and ask them, where is the lie? You know, where is the propaganda? How is this corporation trying to control your, you know, the television is a box that everybody puts in their home that is a tool for corporations to sell you stuff, right? And so what are they doing? And I have nothing against corporations. Corporations are a great thing. But they should not be running our government, because corporations don't want the same thing for America as Americans want. Corporations don't want democracy. They don't want free markets. They want profits. And the best way for them to get profits is to, you know, get their hooks into a public, use our campaign finance system to get their hooks into a public official, then use that public official to dismantle the marketplace, to give them monopoly but control, and or a competitive edge, and then to allow them to privatize the commons, the air, the water, the wildlife, the fisheries, the public lands, the things that belong to all of us, and to allow them to privatize it by polluting them. In New York State, the Constitution says that people of the state own the fisheries of the state. Everybody has a right to use them. Nobody has a right to use them in a way that will diminish or injure their use and enjoyment by others. That's the law. It's ancient law. It goes back to Roman times. It was in the Code of Justinian. It's in the Magna Carta. It's in the Constitution of every state. And I pay $30 for a fishing license every year. But I don't own the fish anymore. They're owned by the General Electric Company and by the coal companies that have contaminated them with mercury and PCBs. So we can't eat them anymore. So they've made themselves rich by privatizing the public trust. And kids need to understand that relationship. And we have to understand this, that the free market is the most powerful economic engine that has ever been devised. But it has to be harnessed to a social purpose. We have to rationalize the free market so that it creates and enhances societies that are the kind of societies that we want to live in, and that make America an exemplar, a template for the rest of the world. You know, we now have in every state, except for California, laws that say to the utility, if you want to make money, you burn a lot of energy. So the more energy, the more coal you burn, the more energy you create, the richer you get. I have a friend called Jim Rogers who runs Duke Power, which is has the second biggest coal fleet in the country. He doesn't want to build any coal, right? He knows that coal is destroying the planet, destroying civilization, destroying the values that make our country great. So he wants to stop. But his shareholders want him to get his customers to leave their lights on all night and to leave the refrigerator doors open. And it's unfair to put a smart, gifted CEO in the position where the only way he can make money is by doing bad things. So here in California, we changed those rules so that the utilities here in this state do not make money by burning energy. They make money by conserving it and by switching to wind and solar and renewables. We changed that law. My group rewrote that law in 1982. And this is not radical. It's the way the utilities used to make money before we had deregulation was by on capital expenditures. So the utility would say, we want to build a dam. They'd go to the Public Utility Commission. They'd say, we want to build a dam. The dam is going to cost $100 million. We want to make 15% annual profit on that. Here's the demonstrated need. The PUC would stamp it approved, and they'd go build the dam. Today, the way the utilities in California make money is they go to the PUC and they say, we want to tear the Edison electric light bulbs out of 1 million homes in our distribution grid. We want to go and replace them with LED bulbs that use 12% of the power. We want to go into every home and tear out the hot water boiler and tear out the appliances and replace them with appliances that use 20% of the power. It's going to cost us $100 million. The homeowner doesn't have to pay. We're going to pay. It'll cost us $100 million, but it will save more energy than we would create by building a dam or a power plant at a fraction of the cost. So the PUC then stamps it approved, and they go out and do it. Because we changed that law, Californians now use half the energy everybody else in this country uses. A Californian uses 6,000 kilowatt hours per year. The rest of us use up between 11 and 14,000. That means that anything Californians make is cheaper than what everybody else makes. And it's one of the reasons you have the biggest economy in this state, is because you use energy a lot more efficiently than anybody else. And it doesn't change people's lifestyles. It doesn't change your aspirations for your children, or it doesn't diminish your quality of life. It simply incentivizes good behavior rather than incentivizing bad behavior, and allows talented, smart people to make money by doing good things for their society and their country, rather than forcing them to make money by doing bad things.
Let's see if we can get two more questions in here for Robert F. Kennedy Jr., our guest today at Climate One at the Commonwealth Club. Yes, please.
In your talk, you've grouped together nuclear, coal, and oil. What are the uncaptured external costs of nuclear energy, and what do you think would take to make nuclear a clean and affordable source?
Well, you know, I always say to the nuke people when they talk to me, I always say I'm all for nuke if they ever make it economical and if they ever make it safe. Right now, it's the least economical probably of any. It competes with coal for probably being the least economical. They used to say when they were building these plants, and I remember this, it will be too cheap to meter. Okay? There's not a single utility in this country that will build a nuclear power plant today unless 100% of the construction costs are paid for by the federal taxpayer. So why is that? And then at the end of the life cycle of the plant, we have to store their waste for 30,000 years, which is five times the length of recorded human history. Okay, well, you know, what kind of subsidy is that? What kind of deficit spending is that to dump on our children? So those are just two of the costs. The biggest cost, you know, I also say safe. They say, well, we are, you know, we're safe. We only had Three Mile Island and Chernobyl and Fukushima, and, you know, other than that, we're really safe.
Come gather around, people, wherever you roam, and admit that the waters around you have grown, and accept it that soon you'll be drenched to the bone. If your time to you is worth saving, then you better start swimming or you'll sink like a stone, for the times they are a-changing. Writers and critics who prophesize with your pen, and keep your eyes wide, the chance won't come again. And don't speak too soon, for the wheel's still in spin, and there's no telling who that it's naming. Was the loser now will be later to win, for the times they are a-changing. Senators, congressmen, please heed the call. Don't stand in the doorway, don't block up the hall. For he that gets hurt will be he who has stalled. The battle outside raging will soon shake your windows and rattle your walls. For the times they are a-changing. from mothers and fathers throughout the land. And don't criticize what you can't understand. Your sons and your daughters are beyond your command. Your old road is rapidly aging. Please get out of the new one if you can't lend your hand. For the times, they are a-changing. The line it is drawn, the curse it is cast. The slow one now will later be fast, as the present now will later be past. The order is rapidly fading, and the first one now will later be last. For the times, they are a-changing.
And now for something completely different.